Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we take time to review the U.S. Open at Oakmont and welcome the renowned professional Bob Ford. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'd be along. This hour, we want to reflect back to the tremendous event last week at Oakmont Country Club outside of Pittsburgh, and the U.S. Open gave you everything you'd want, weather-wise, otherwise, winter-wise, and, well, just so much. So a young man that we met a number of years ago has been the starter for the U.S. Open now for almost 10 years, and this year, of course, he was back at Oakmont, where he was a head professional for 37 years. If you don't know who I'm talking about by now, you probably do. I'm talking about the illustrious professional Bob Ford, who joins us on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. Mr. Ford, welcome back to the show. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you, sir.
Keith, you too, buddy.
Well, thank you very much. Tremendous week for you, or a couple of weeks. Obviously, Oakmont hosting another U.S. Open. It was a big, interesting week.
Keith, it was, you know, we've had 10, it was our 10th Open. I've been there for 6, and I got to tell you, you know, it's the first one that I haven't been employed for, you know, although I did do the starting on the tee for the USGA, but I don't know, I thought it was one of the most exciting Opens I've ever been involved with, and we're just so pleased with all the press and TV coverage and all the views that the drones gave us. It was magnificent.
Wait, the USGA didn't slip you a couple bucks for all that hard work that you've been doing year after year now for almost a decade?
No, it's just a volunteer position, but I'm very, very proud of it, and it's a real honor for me to be able to do that, so I'm delighted to do it for them.
Yeah, it must have been really different having that hat on this time at Oakmont instead.
It was, because, you know, after I was done, you know, my wife helps me out, and after we were done starting, you know, we lived 2 blocks down the road from the club, so we put our sneakers on and went down to the house and hit the couch and watched it on TV. No other responsibilities. It was nice.
Well, I do tell people that it's great to go to major sporting events, but the best place is exactly, well, at Mr. Ford's house, probably for the U.S. Open, but in your TV room with your big screen TV, whether it's the Super Bowl or World Series or whatever it is, because you can see
exactly
so many things. I remember going back to a lot of years to my first tournaments that I covered on the PGA Tour, and I'd be in the media center, and it's a pretty big media center for a lot of the events, especially the U.S. Open. And I'd watch a lot of the golf writers. They existed then, not so much now, but golf writers and people covering the tournament. And they're watching the tournament on the big television screens they have in the media center versus being out on the course so they can see more things. So even then, I'm like, well, why don't you guys just stay home and you can still write the article? You don't need to be at the event, you know? So
that's true. Very true.
The things we've seen over the years. But you have, you know, 37 years, almost 4 decades as a head professional at Oakmont. I mean, the numbers that you put up and the tree, as they call it, of the professionals that you put through the system and help get their start and progress in their career, people always talk about that. When Bob Ford's name gets mentioned, the longevity is one thing, but the people along the way that you have mentored or tutored or what have you in your system, it always gets talked about as well.
Well, it is, and it's certainly probably my biggest legacy, I guess. And a lot of them came back to during the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, to start the players. Devin Gee, who took over for me 9 years ago, was kind enough to invite all those guys because he's one of them. And he got to play as a starter on the weekend. It was fun to announce him. And, that tree grows and grows and grows because those guys are all putting out people themselves. And It's just pretty neat. Pretty neat deal.
For the people that listen to this show, they have an idea because we have a lot of teaching pros and PGA professionals on, and obviously we help the PGA of America however we can. But help people understand what that means from a professional standpoint, because it's trying to migrate it over the years now to more specialties.
Well, you know, and I had a lot of guys work for me that became sales reps or, you know, director of instructions. And, you know, they branched out to do a lot of different things. And, you know, they're still as important to me as the guy that's got the head pro job at Shinnecock, like Jack Druga. So, you know, it was just a great part of it. You know, when you give people responsibility, they either, you know, when they put them in the deep end, they either come up swimming or they drown. And I didn't have too many drown. Once you give people responsibility, they really rise to the occasion.
Well, Oakmont, to get your training there, you know, from a young professional standpoint, it's a big deal. I mean, Oakmont gets talked about as being the toughest course in the United States play-wise.
Yeah, but it's just a normal country club, like every other country club in every other town. But, you know, these guys, I'll tell you, you know, coming from Oakmont or Congressional or Burning Tree or Pine Valley, you know, those resumes go to the top of the pile. So, you know, the clubs give them the biggest boost. And then their training, you know, that they get here at the club from the members and from me and everybody else, you know, they're ready to go. These kids are, you know, by 4 or 5 years, these guys are ready.
So membership at those kind of clubs are interesting because you have some of the greatest people I've ever met in my life happen to be very rich as well, but never talk about it. And then you have the other cross section and such. How do you deal with, I'll call them elite members from the standpoint of those clubs you mentioned are tough to get into and sometimes tougher to stay in if you don't abide by what you should be abiding by?
Well, Keith, you know, when I took over at Seminole in the year 2000, you know, I worked there for 21 years in the winters and Oakmont in the summer. And I was nervous. You know, I'd spent 20 years at Oakmont and then I got the job at Seminole for the winter time. And I was nervous going down there because of the, you know, the elevated status of the members, because they were the who's who of, you know, American industry. And, you know, after spending, I don't know, a couple months on the tee, meeting everybody and greeting everybody and, you know, chit-chatting with everybody, it got easy. It was like, you know, all these guys want to talk about is golf. I can do that. So you know, it's a big common denominator. You know, when you love golf and you know golf, it's a fraternity, and whether you're an employee or a member, you know, we're all the same, and it really got easy after a while.
Well, you're a very business-like type of person. That demeanor comes across. You're very, I don't say stoic, but you're very respectful all the time. You always have a good thing to say about people. You're way admired, highly admired in the industry and some people outside the industry that are aware of you. So where did that come from? Is that your upbringing or what did you develop this demeanor?
You know, my dad was in the steel business, mostly in Pittsburgh, but a little bit in Philadelphia where I grew up. I actually did all my schooling before college over in Philadelphia. And when I got to work at Oakmont in 75, I guess, there were a lot of steel people in Pittsburgh. And all the guys that came in and said, you know, I know your father. And I was like, well, hope that's a good thing. And they said, maybe the nicest guy I've ever met in the steel business. You know, he was very admired. He was, he wasn't a top executive, but he was plant manager and did a lot of, you know, just knew, you know, the steel business is a lot like the golf business. You know, there's just a fraternity of people, and his reputation was pretty impeccable. And yeah, it just, everybody talked about how nice he was. And I hung a sign in my office, you know, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. And doesn't cost more, as you know, Keith, you are. And, I just sort of lived by that. You know, I was impressed with my dad's reputation. I wanted to be just like him. And you know, it's not that hard.
Well, you know, that's the thing I love about our game, and that is the camaraderie, and the doing this show has afforded me not just to meet fantastic people like yourself, but just a cross section of everybody, whether it's a musician or an athlete not playing golf, or a comedian or an actor or whatever, they all want to play golf. That's a great common denominator, like you mentioned. But with that goes the how do I say this, to be, you know, nice, you know, the gentlemanliness, you know, obviously no offense to the ladies out there, but, you know, that's the way that I always, with my playing with my grandfather coming up that way, that's the way I learned the game as well. And we've really seen people get away from that now, and it's really almost bombastic at times, and it's not going in the right direction as we look at it.
Well, the game has grown so far, so quickly, you know, after COVID. And, you know, we just don't have quite the decorum and the respect that you and I grew up with. You know, I grew up caddying at Aronimink, and, you know, I just watched and learned from those people how they conducted themselves. And they were all gentlemen, and they all took their hats off when they were on 18 and shook everybody's hand. And when the clubhouse, took their hats off. And, you know, it's just behaving like a gentleman. And a lot of that's going away, sadly.
Yeah, I remember distinctly after all these years of caddying for my grandfather, and I didn't have golf shoes. I didn't have spikes. I had sneakers, and I remember this. We were on this one green, and this I'll call him an old guy. This like elderly gentleman is like, "Hey, what are you doing on the green with those shoes on?" Hey, you know, so it's like, and now we fast forward today where, hey, you can play in sneakers apparently. Who, you know, or you know, yeah, spikes that look like that. So.
That's right.
It's crazy how it's changed. How has it changed for you? Now, supposedly, I heard that you're retired. Okay, so you don't work at Oakmont anymore, and apparently Seminole's just, you know, not working out for you either. So what does retirement mean for Bob Ford?
Well, it means I've got control of my own time. I don't have to be anywhere at any particular time. I do work for a company called GBN, Golf Business Network, and I work. We have a little search group. We do searches for clubs in for their managers, their superintendents, and the directors of golf. So, you know, it takes about 4 or 5 hours a week. Not a lot, but you know, I do a lot of Zoom calls with them, trying to get the right people in the right jobs, and I'm on the executive committee of the Pennsylvania State Golf Association. I'm the chairman of the competition committee, and that's fun. That takes about 2 minutes a day. So nothing that takes a lot of my time, and I play a lot of golf, Keith. I play 5 times a week, and just love playing the game. I'm not very good anymore, but I love it, and I love the camaraderie of it, and meet, you know, being with my buddies, and That keeps me busy. And grandkids. I've got 3 grandkids now. They keep me busy.
Yeah, that'll happen for sure. What do you mean you're not very good? This is Bob Ford we're talking about and talking to on TW Keith Jones. So don't buy all that stuff, okay? When you get it down the tee, right down the middle, and, you know, you know, someday I aspire to play as badly as you do, sir, let me just say, from that standpoint. But I don't have the credentials. We'll talk a little bit more about you, the history of you and the game, and how far back, besides caddying at that little dumpy place that you said, geez, I mean, you know, you get your start in golf, you go to caddy, and you get a big club like that. That's fascinating. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was a great spot. Yeah.
All right, so you're not doing board work. I mean, you were on the number of boards over the years for companies.
Yeah, you know, I work for Straight Down. It's a based out of St. Louis Obispo company. It's made in America, and Mike Raleigh owns the company, and he's a great player. He plays competitive amateur senior golf, and we have a ball. We went to Australia, New Zealand together this winter. And so I do some things for him. You know, again, 2 minutes a week, that's about it. But yeah, so that's it.
With great Bob Ford, we'll be back after this break. We'll be right back. And we're back with Bob Ford. The guy's got, you heard some humor, you know, in that last, that was him humorizing on that. But, you know, there's a fantastically known, unknown architect who built Oakmont and had Peter Kessler on my show last week. Peter, formerly of Golf Channel, who I think you are familiar with. But Peter is this kind of historian. And he was talking about the fantastic design and things about the club that made it very unique and why it's deemed one of the toughest courses.
Well, you know, I have great respect for Peter Kessler. I thought he was probably, you know, a renowned historian doing the Golf Channel. He got a little trouble with Arnold, sadly, over the COR issues. But Peter was really something. I thought he is. He's a special man and did a great job on the Golf Channel. That was when the Golf Channel was at its peak, you know. But he's right about Mr. Fones. You know, he built the golf course. He wanted the hardest golf course in the world. Wanted to host championships. That's in our DNA. And but one thing number one, he had a very famous son who was a U.S. amateur champion in 1910. Captained the first couple Walker Cups. He kind of started the Walker Cup and got Mr. Walker to, you know, donate the trophy. He should have done it himself, but he wasn't selfish like that. And then he became president of the USGA in 26 and 27. So he was, you know, in that era, that 30-year period from 1910 to 1940, really, he was really one of the kings of the game and the kid, the son. And they also hired a guy named Emil Loeffler, who was the pro superintendent here at Oakmont, has worked here since he was 10, started out as caddy master. He ended up designing 15 golf courses here in Pittsburgh, one in Texas, believe it or not, but he was a great golf course designer. And very much in a closet, he did a lot to this golf course. You know, when Mr. Fone said, I want a bunker there because I see too many people hitting it over that other bunker, Emil was the one to design it and put it in. So he had a great deal to do with the golf course. He gets zero credit. I don't think his name was mentioned once on television. His father actually came up with the rakes that created the furrows, you know, when they had furrows in the bunkers. And so, you know, between the Fones and Loeffler back in that era, Loeffler was a great player, too. Not only did he design golf courses and was a superintendent, he won the Pennsylvania Open, played in a couple of U.S. Opens. And, yeah, he was quite a guy. You know, was sorry that I didn't live in that era and get to know him. But so they had some great hands on it. You know, then we went through the era of Robert Trent Jones and Tom Fazio and Arthur Hills and yada, yada, yada. And then Gil Hance came in, and Gil Hance went back to everything that the Fones family or Loeffler did on the ground and put it all back together again and just did a magnificent job. And the result, you know, resulted in, you know, one of the greatest Opens we ever had.
Yeah, Gil's an interesting guy. We need to get him on the show. He did a lot of work with Bo Welling down at Frisco for the PGA of America headquarters. And interesting guy to talk to. And there's something about going back, and it's like touching up a Picasso. You know, some of these guys really get into that, where they do the research and they see how things were initially and stuff. So getting a golf course back to original state can be very, very difficult.
Well, yeah, and he did the research. He's the only one that did the research. All those other architects did whatever they wanted to do. And, you know, they want to do what they want to do, not what Fones had in there. And some of the things, you know, we put the ditch back across 10. We took the fairway down to the ditch on 11. Many cases, we widened fairways. And number 7, you know, used to be just kind of a straightaway hole. Gil's whole mantra was, you know, we need these guys to have choices because that's when you get in their head instead of just saying, you know, just play it as far as you can hit it. Mm-hmm. And it really messed with them. Really messed with, you know, they came around, you know, how do you play number 12? You know, how do you do this? They were pretty mesmerized by all the choices and how difficult the golf course was. And, man, the ones that kept it in the fairway and made all their putts, J.J. Spahn, he was amazing.
Yeah, and guys like Bryson DeChambeau don't make the cut. I mean, that's it was brutal, and then the weather comes in, and there's a lot of factors with that. We'll talk a little bit more about that with Bob Forde, our guest this hour. He is a great man and a guy who knows more about golf than many, most. Yeah, that's him. But we'll be back with Bob Forde after this bottom of the hour break. And then yeah, that's him. But after this bottom of the hour break.
Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. Lama. Long. Into a 10,000 foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga Gunga Galunga.
And we're back to start the second half hour of the show, spending it with Bob Forde. 37 years at Oakmont, 26 is the head pro. You know, a few years down at Seminole, that, you know, that course down there in Florida. But it goes back to Pittsburgh and Philadelphia before that. And so how do you end up, because Bob Forde is in the University of Tampa Hall of Fame, by the way, for his golf play. So you play in Tampa. How do you end up from Philadelphia to Tampa? It's a good move, don't get me wrong, but how does that happen?
Well, it's the luckiest break I ever got in my life, really. When I went to college at Tampa, my parents moved back to Pittsburgh. So, you know, I went back, I guess my senior year in high school, that summer, which was my last summer in Philadelphia, the Open was at Marion, and Trevino beat Nicklaus in a playoff. And my mom was a big volunteer for the events that happened in Philadelphia. It was the IVB Classic at White Marsh. She always volunteered. And so she volunteered for that Open. I said, well, I'll volunteer too. You know, I was like 17 years old. And so we did. We had a great time. You know, I got to see all these guys. I got really turned on to golf. And then my folks moved to Pittsburgh. I go to Tampa and I'm in school. It's like, the Oakmont's going to host the 73 Open, you know, 2 years later. I said, geez, I guess I'd like to volunteer for that one, too. So I wrote Lou Worsham, who was the professional at the time, a letter from school. And he said, well, when you get home in the spring, come see me. So got home in the spring. I go see him. And he said, yeah, why don't you go to, you know, why don't you start tomorrow? I can use you. So he put me to work helping him with the merchandise. I put together, I think, 50,000 of those, mirror periscopes, if you remember those.
Yeah, right. So you can see over crowds, right.
I put them all together and sold them, and that was kind of my job. But that was Johnny Miller's Open when he shot 63.
Indeed.
And on Sunday, when he was doing his deal, I said to Mr. Worsham in the shop, I said, I think they ran out of black numbers. All they're putting up for Mr. Miller are red numbers. He said, no, son, he's making birdies out there. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I couldn't even fathom them doing that. But so the state amateur was going to be at Oakmont in 74 the next year. And I came and played. I shot a million. But, I made sure to see Mr. Worsham again, just being nice. You know, I never intended to be, to work for him full time. But 75, my senior year in college, I started to play better. And I went down. He worked in the winters at Fort Lauderdale at Coral Ridge Country Club. And I called him and said, can I come see you? And he said, yeah, come on down. So I drove down for about 3 hours. Said, here's my playing resume. What do you think I should do with my career? And I wanted him to say, you should play the tour, and this is what you should do. This is how you ought to go about it. And he looked at it, and he kind of humped. He said, well, why don't you come back this summer when you get out of school, and I'll find out whether you're any good or not. And I said, well, what would I do? He said, well, you'll be one of my assistants. And I was like, drove home, and I'm thinking, well, wouldn't be the worst thing to do in the summers. There's not many opportunities to play as a mini tour player. And, you know, if I don't make it playing, I'm sure I'll meet somebody that'll take to me and put me in the insurance business or wealth management or steel or whatever. So that was kind of my deal. I was going to try to play, and if I didn't, I'd get a job with one of the members. And it didn't quite work out that way, but I don't want any mulligans, Keith. And, you know, I missed the tour school four times. He retired after 5 years, and I was lucky enough being in the right place at the right time, and I knew everybody and knew what needed to be done, really. You know, Lou was kind of an old-school golf professional. You know, they could care less about merchandising and just about playing and teaching for those guys. And but, you know, the people really wanted, you know, merchandise. So that became my, you know, something that became very important to me and something that I became known for, actually. So, you know, it just worked out. And years went by, and oh my God, 37 years, I think I better get out of here before they throw me out.
Nah, you keep going back. You live two blocks away. Come on, you know you're always invited, which is, you know, sometimes you do know when it's time to leave the building, but don't go too far from the building because you might want to play. As we're talking to Bob Ford on Tee It Up with Keith Jones, I didn't see on all your illustrious awards and such, Merchandiser of the Year from PGA of America. I'm guessing you probably must have been up for it if you didn't win it.
Well, actually, I won twice, actually.
There it is. I still don't see it. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. So.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, two-time merchandise PGA. See, I want him to tell. That's, you know, he has to say something on this show. You have done so many things, and merchandise has become so important. I mean, it's not just the what it was out of somebody's trunk in down in Florida to what it's become now. This thousands and tens of thousands of square feet of stuff in Orlando at the end of January, and then the now Frisco show in July, but. It's amazing to me how somebody else can come up with another shirt. There's another shirt company, you know. It's like, how many can there be? But the merchandising, that expertise really can make a lot of money for a country club or a golf club.
Well, or the golf professional, you know. It was really my sole income. You know, they paid me, like, you know, $1,000 a month for 20 years. And, the rest of the merchandise was mine, and teaching and playing, and you know, that was it. That was my income. So, you know, I actually got very fond of doing it. It wasn't because it was my income, but I just enjoyed it. And you know, we hired a gal named Annie, who's been the merchandiser there for the last 25 years, and she's done a phenomenal job, and the numbers are just extraordinary today versus when I was there. But I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
So I was talking to Dennis Satisher, who was a head pro at Caves Valley. I met him, let's see, a number of years ago. I sat next to him or near him at Bob Toski's birthday party a few years ago, and we were talking about that, and he was getting ready to think about retirement and such, and he had the Caves Valley logo on the cuff of the shirt he was wearing. And so that, obviously, I recognize that we're talking about that. He says, I tell my members, look, this is your club. You know, you really should do whatever you need to do or should do to support the club. And it made a ton of sense to me. If you belong to Oakmont or Seminole or Pine Valley or whatever, you would think that you would want to wear the logo.
No, for sure. And it's funny that you bring up Denny's name. He's one of my partners at GBN doing the search business, because he's so well connected. And as you know, such a great guy, really good guy.
Yeah, very good guy. Another good guy that was somebody mentioned to me this week, because I talked to Mike Morgan, who was at the small company Titleist, and then now is running Northwestern Golf. And Brian Simmons has done some wedge work and some club work for him. And Mike said, why don't you ask, when you get a chance, why don't you ask Bob what shaft he plays in his driver? So I said, oh, okay, I'll do that. And I just did that or whatever. But Brian's been doing a bunch of design work, and understand that's one of your guys as well.
Well, we never worked together, but we've become fast friends. I love the guy. His son, Dylan, is trying to get into the Major League Baseball world. He's a great catcher, collegiate catcher, and looks to me like he ought to be in the pros. But Brian is a great guy. He loves golf. He owns Winston Trails down in Boynton Beach, Florida, and kills it down there. You know, they play 200 people a day in the wintertime. It's just a old Joe Lee, wonderful golf course. And yeah, he bought that, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. Just a fun guy, loves golf, and teaches golf, teaches a few guys that play the tour. Brandon Matthews, who, you know, won on the Corn Ferry and got out there on the tour and is kind of struggling now. And gosh, I'm forgetting the guy's name on the senior tour, but he's won. Actually, Tim, oh, I'll come up with it. It's what happens, Keith, when you get old. You forget names.
You know, 55 is not that old. I don't understand what's going on here with Bob Ford right now. You know, I do. I will tell you, sir, I do suffer from CRS, and that's can't remember. But yeah, it happens. It happens.
No, I know the initials. Sadly, I have it.
It is real. For those lists, it is real. I'm telling you, you know, self-diagnosed, but I'm telling you, it's real from that standpoint. So what has brought you the most enjoyment or joy over your lengthy career?
Well, professionally, you know, I would say it's watching the young guys grow up and get their own jobs. That's really has been, you know, a passion for mine. You know, obviously teaching people and watching them get better is it's a thrilling deal for me. And, you know, making people's day. I mean, we strive to make guests, you know, members for a day and make them feel like they're a member. And, you know, many times guests are pretty uncomfortable at fancy clubs. And, you know, our goal is to make them feel comfortable and warm and, you know, make them really feel like we care about them. And, well, we want them to have a great day, as they should. So those are the things that kind of I used to get up in the morning excited about.
All right, so here's the next question following, and thank you for leading me this way. Have you gotten the call from Aaron Rodgers yet?
Oh, no, I have not, no. That's funny. I mean, he was a wonderful player in his career. I don't get it. I don't get what Pittsburgh's doing. But, you know, we haven't won in years, and we keep giving our coach, you know, more contracts for mediocrity. I don't get it.
Well, I like Tomlin, but I tell you, it is interesting exactly what you say. The productivity should be way higher than it has been. And the reason I brought up Aaron Rodgers is obviously Mr. Ford is also a big NFL guy. So that's going to be interesting to see. And hopefully between the two of them, maybe they can actually do something, right? That's the billion-dollar question right now.
Well, you're going to lose a billion because I'll bet you a dollar we're not going to do much with it. So.
Well, that's unfortunate. You know, you had Russell Wilson. I mean, so many quarterbacks have come through since Big Ben stepped off, and it's crazy.
He had Ben Roethlisberger for 15 years and couldn't win. So, you know, Jesus, good grief.
Oh,
Hall
no.
of Fame quarterback and, you know, incredible offense. We had the bus. You know, couldn't do it.
I don't want to bring Bob Ford down on this show right now talking football. We better get back to the little ball that can be controlled. So I don't know.
Well, all of Pittsburgh. I mean, our baseball team's the worst in baseball. Those owners are the worst ever, and our hockey team's gone to poof. Just terrible. It's a shame. We're the city of champions, you know.
Yeah, you know, I actually grew up the likes of rooting for. Well, Roberto Clemente was one of my all-time favorite baseball players, but Willie Stargell and that whole family thing going on in Pittsburgh, that was phenomenal when I got a chance to go up to the old stadium to watch the Steelers play and such. A lot of tradition in that city, and it is rough. It is very rough for the fans across the board. Although I don't think it's quite as rough for the Pirates as it is for the Rockies. So, you know, apparently that's even a hotter mess, as the saying goes, going on in Colorado. But I digress on that. So you know the call will come. So because Aaron Rodgers is going to get out there because that's the competitor that he is, you know. So you know,
he better win some football games before I take him to Oakmont.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I'll be picking him up. Says Bob Ford if he starts winning football games. That's true.
And then, exactly.
Be my personal guest. I heard that on that. So that's so you do enough. So you got the family thing, and you know it's interesting because that is the rub, right? You're a super successful professional and super successful golf professional, but you've got a family that you have raised, and now that your children have their children, and it, you know, gets layered that way. Now you do get a chance finally to delve more into that, because the game and being a professional, it really does, you know, take away from those things.
Well, it does. It takes a lot of your time. I've got a remarkable wife who you know, has brought these three kids up, and they were all here last week for the Opens. We had quite a time, you know, dinners every night and just spending time together. Like I told you earlier, you know, I'd tee everybody off and I'd go home. And but she's done a great job. Now she's got these three great grandkids that she's Googles over, and, you know, I get to spend more time with them than I spent with my kids. So, yeah, it's a blast. It's family life is awesome.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And do you have putters or small clubs in the hands of the children yet?
Not yet, no.
Somebody's holding you off at bay. You know, they must be younger than I think, because otherwise, doesn't want to?
Two is the oldest. Yeah, two at two, and one in about a month.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay, so right. So you got about, man, what age? Because people ask me all the time, what age should my kids start playing golf? And I think Tiger started at three or something. But is there an age in your opinion?
Not really. You know, I really want them, you know, I wanted my kids to play, you know, lacrosse and football and hockey and, you know, all the other sports, you know, team sports, to learn all that and really work on their bodies. And so my kids never really, you know, were serious golfers. And my one son's a 2 handicap. My other son's probably a 3. And my daughter doesn't play. So those are my three kids. And but her husband's about a 3. So, you know, between the son-in-law and my two sons, we have a ball.
Wow, that's good to have the in-law that's a 3. Are your sons low digit because they got the Bob Ford genes, or the combination of that and working hard?
Yeah, I think all of that. You know, they grew up, we lived on the golf course at Oakmont on the 18th green for 25 years, so they kind of grew up there, so they grew up playing the game. We never really put them in a lot of tournaments and got them, you know, competitive that way. They were doing all the other sports. But, you know, like most kids, they get through college and, oh, my God, you know, now I'm in the adult world, and golf is a big deal in business. And so they started really getting into it. The one boy is a member at Wingfoot. He works in Manhattan. And Wingfoot's got the Open coming up in a couple of years. That'll be fun. And the other boy is a member out in San Francisco at San Francisco Golf Club. And he's really a golf snob, and he thinks he's cool because he's a member out there. But he's good. He's probably the best player of them all.
There you go. Speaking of best players, that's Bob Ford, our guest. We'll head to this final break. We'll be back to wrap up the show.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
And we're back for our final segment. It's been a pleasure to spend some quality time with a great person and a guy we tricked it coming back on the show. So I appreciate that, Mr. Ford, indeed, personally. And, you know, you're always welcome, but fascinating, your career and such. And, you know, you've got some more legacy to live. So, but multiple Hall of Fame. So not only is he in University of Tampa Hall of Fame, He's also in the Western Pennsylvania Sports Hall of Fame, the Allegheny Kiske Valley Sports Hall of Fame, and the PGA Professional Hall of Fame. That one might be super important for a golfer that way. And if I missed any, I'm sorry, multi-Hall of Famers. I think you're the only other one. Toski's the only other one, a multi-Hall of Famer, that I've had on the show that I recall. But, you know, that's
he's one of my mentors, you know, the way he taught golf. And he was obviously a legend playing the game and a legend as a teacher, you know, countrywide, and just a fantastic guy. You know, now the Seminole Pro-Am is kind of famous in the golf circles. It happens the Monday after the Honda. I'm going to call it the Honda for life. And he won it in 52, believe it or not. You know, Hogan won it, Snead won it, Arnold won it. You know, all the top guys in that era. We quit having it in 61, so, or else Nicklaus would have won it. And Toski won it in 52. So this year, you know, he's 98 years old, and he calls and said, you know, could any chance I could come out and watch the pro member? And it's like, you know, nobody's allowed out there except for the members. We don't sell tickets. We don't let anybody bring guests that aren't members. So, you know, it was a bit of an exemption, but we gave him one because he was a 52, you know, year champion in 1952. And he came out, looked, you know, he's got his hat on, and he adored it. And he spent a lot of time with Rory talking about the golf swing with Rory. I don't know how you help that golf swing, but he had the time of his life. And you mentioned you were at his birthday party, probably his 95th birthday party. And I got to tell you, he's going to have a best birthday party when he's 100. That guy, he's not going anywhere.
He's a regular. So just for the record, he's a regular contributor to this show. You know, why nobody else taps into that knowledge and that memory, beyond me, I don't care. I'm going to be very selfish. We've become very, very close, family-like, and he's always welcome. But he's fascinating because just everything you said there was Toski personified, because I told him he's got to live to at least 105. I need about seven more. But I hope so. I mean, his birthday parties are, I think this September, I think he's bringing in some hula dancers. I don't know. Those are his words, not mine. I don't know. I'll be happy to be in his presence and at that party. But it's just, yeah. When you see that kind of longevity, you got a long way to go, Mr. Ford. You've done a lot of things, but you know.
I hope so. I hope I'm like him. I tell you, he gets out on the dance floor. He gets the microphone. He sings. I mean, he's an entertainer, that guy. He was born to entertain.
He really is. He really is. But I will, next time I talk to him, I'll mention that I had you on, and I'm sure he'll espouse those virtues as we go along and stuff. But fantastic to hear your Toski stories. We'll have to tap into that at some point going forward. But that's phenomenal to have you on the show. Been president of Tri-State PGA. Tri-State PGA Teacher of the Year. Is there anything you haven't won?
I never won the U.S. Open. That would have been nice.
Yeah. Well, you did. You played, right? So getting in is quite an accomplishment. So.
Yeah, it's so hard. So hard to get in. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, you get into this senior U.S. Open when you're old enough.
I did. I played in a couple of those. I wasn't any good in those either.
when you're your own hardest critic, this is not going to get you. This is not very productive right now.
No, I wasn't very productive when I played either.
You are awesome. It is always great to have you on the show, and always great to catch up with you. Appreciate all the great stories and all the humor, and just thanks for everything that you continue to do for the game and the impact that you've had on the game and a lot of people like that. So thanks so much, and we will look forward to having you back on in the future. Whenever you want to come on, you're always welcome. But Bob Ford, my guest on Tee with Keith Jones. Yes, the phenomenal Bob Ford. But we're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Mr. Ford would want you to. Practice, practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.